Republicans are ruthless like this. If, you know, Puerto Rico has a disaster and they're American citizens, well, they didn't help elect Trump, so they didn't get much in the way of a bailout, right?
Right.
Well, Long was a hardball politician, and so if you opposed roads in your community, well, guess what? Your community doesn't get the road. And when people would complain about it, he would still talk to your politician. And either the politician would change or they would change politicians when the next election came around. And
right.
Pretty soon, you know, he was spending all this money that everybody wanted. I mean, the Dr. Weiss, if he indeed did kill Long, there's some debate about it. But the reason he went there was, it was either his father and father-in-law had lost a patronage job. That was what he wanted to talk about was, you know, they needed their government paycheck back.
Right.
But everybody did that. We talked to, there's a Louisiana conservationist named Carolyn Dorman.
Mm-hmm.
And early in her career, she was a teacher, and this was before Long, like, you know, the early teens. And when a new governor came in, all the teachers lost their jobs, and new teachers were appointed who supported a new guy. Imagine patronage coming down to that level. So you're in the middle of your school year, and, after Christmas, you've got to move out because they've got to. So, yeah, I don't like political patronage all that much, but that was the water they swam in. You know, he was.
That's how political systems function to this day.
Yeah, totally. I mean, look at why one of the things it's turning out about the Bidens, you know, and Hunter Biden and his quote-unquote corruption, well, who's that lawyer for the president? Used to be mayor of New York.
Rudolph Giuliani.
Yeah, Rudy. He was trying to put his own people on that board so they could get that money from being on the board of a big oil company. And so in order to make room for his people, I mean, it's, you know, a case of doing bad while doing evil. They, you know, we have a pretext to attack Biden, but also we get our people to patronize.
Right. They just want to. They want to see what they want to see. You know, they want to really talk about, oh, well, I don't want to talk about Biden. I want to talk about what Trump's doing or whatever. And it's essentially just playing your side.
There is a corrupt duopoly. You know, I mean, obviously one side is fascist, and the other wants to give you health care, but there is still a certain level of ambient corruption. And that's kind of what did Hillary in. You know, they made a choice when Bill left the White House. We're going to get all the money we can get. And we're going to do it well out in public. It was all legal. But it looks bad. You know, I'm giving speeches to the big banks, making $500,000. How much is she going to take after the banks when she gets in? I mean, you know, Barack Obama. People called him a socialist the whole time he was in. He was a king of moderates. And the biggest contributor to his initial election when it became clear he was going to win, he got $3 million for the banks.
Right. And he was a generationally talented politician. He had the ability to portray himself as something that he wasn't.
Right. And if you listened closely, he was never about, you know, storming the Bastille. It was all, let's hold hands, blue America, red America, getting along, getting our sequet, snaps in the trough. But he wound up giving trillions of dollars to banks while grandma was getting thrown out of her house because she had been defrauded by the banker. No banker has ever gone to jail. Well, that is a marvelous return on investment for your
rich
bankers.
Right. Yeah. They just make money because they get there in those positions. Anyway, so how did this apply to Long?
Oh, well, you know, he gave his people money.
Mm-hmm. He's not
Long,
remarkable is what you're saying.
What's that?
He's not remarkable in that
sense. He did what every other American politician has done going all the way back. The idea of civil service, that you and I would have our job. We both worked for the state, which, by the way, folks, that makes us socialists, right? It doesn't matter what you preach. What we practice is socialism. I mean, you get paid by tax money, right?
Yeah, by the tax money of, I guess, a combination of things, right? But
right.
Mostly local property taxes.
Right, and I pay. Me too. I get paid. Some money. A little bit is still coming from the state. You know what else is a tax? Tuition, and we've raised tuition a lot on our kids.
Same tickets are a tax.
Yeah.
It's a farm tax.
Yeah. So anyway, he would make sure that his own people got the money where the previous administration had given their people money.
Mm-hmm.
So it was traditional
spoil
system. Yeah. Just the way that and it was the only way, by the way, that he could make changes. It would benefit the rest of us. It wasn't the corruption.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Yeah, not in the Aristotelian sense. It was the corruption of redirecting some of these funds from the pockets of the very, very wealthy who had always gotten all of it,
mm-hmm.
make sure those kids in Shreveport had a book on their desk.
Right. So it was a corruption against the wealthy.
Yeah.
Which, to bring it back to Lula, which we mentioned earlier.
Yes.
It's almost the exact same sort of situation.
Right.
And you can't participate in this system because it's based off these kinds of relationships that would be, you know, in that, you know, common, you know, view, hidden most of the time. And when it goes, like, due to corruption, but, like, they're the only ones that are being held to that standard.
Yes, exactly. There's a double standard, and Michael Brooks talks about this all the time. Even the most moderate leftist, like Joe fucking Biden, senator from MasterCard. Can I curse on your radio? You might have to beat me up.
You're fine.
Even the most moderate of leftists, if you consider Joe Biden a part of the left, he still gets tarred with that same brush about stuff that they did not care about whatsoever. And when has Donald Trump ever cared about corruption other than getting his own part of it?
Or destroying his enemies.
Right. It's a way to attack your enemy.
The corruption is a tool to gain what you want to gain in the system and also to vilify your enemies. And it's like, not to be all both sides about it, but that is something that is common across the board.
Well, there are levels of corruption, right? I mean, betraying your country to get Russian help to rig an election, that's you know, actually against the law. Whereas, unfortunately, the stuff that the Bidens and the Trump kids are doing mostly is not. We have corrupted our system to the point that common corruption is perfectly legal nowadays.
Yeah.
Thanks to a right-wing Supreme Court.
Yeah. Such has always been the case, at least in some
states. Yeah. I mean, especially back in the time of Huey Long before the...
Yeah, Louisiana is well known as a state that was like a one that would maximize advantages and sort of like lean on leverages internally.
Well, and, you know, the term Banana Republic was coined by a New Orleans author, O. Henry. And a lot of the stuff that was going on in Central and South America has traditionally gone on here as well. We are a banana republic. And he just came in and said, okay, these are the levers of power. I will use them on behalf of the people. He wasn't a reformer in the sense of I'm going to uncorrupt the system. He said, I'm going to use this inherent corruption of the system. I'm going to take the system as it exists and turn that fire hose of money onto the people rather than just the rich.
Right. Right, and use every bit of leverage that he can. Because he wasn't, well, I guess this is the question. It never really seemed to me in this sense, but he was not particularly a mass mobilization type of a populist, right?
Well, I mean, he did do the Share Our Wealth Club.
Mm-hmm.
And here was another.
Okay.
He was also a master of mass rallies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this was a period of great rallies. We see their power even now in a Trump rally or a Bernie rally or even a Liz Warren rally.
They're the only two that can draw a crowd.
Right. Well, he had a car and two sound trucks. And, you know, and he would send his sound trucks ahead, one to LaPlace and one to Hammond. And he would drive to LaPlace, jump out, the truck's all set up. He jumps up on the back of the truck. You've got these huge booming speakers, and he would harangue the crowd. and then he would jump in his car, speed to Hammond. Meanwhile, his truck that he left behind packs up and drives much more slowly up to, say, a meet. And while he's in the process of doing his thing in Hammond, they set up in a meet, and he was able to springboard across the state, and eventually he took it on the road to, there was a woman who took over her husband's Senate job when he died, and it was expected she would retire, and she was an ally of Huey, and he talked her into running for re-election, which really outraged the good old boys of Arkansas.
Sure, and that still happens, in U.S. Congress as well. When you look at like generations of people who sort of like, you know, son and father are both in these, you know, these districts.
Well, in the Boggs, Hale Boggs and Lindsey Boggs.
Yeah.
You know, Cokie Roberts just passed away. All of them descended from, by the way, W.C.C. Claiborne, our first American governor. So, you know, it's a small state for the elite. Anyway, he would harangue the crowd. Oh, he went to Arkansas and took the trucks, the sound trucks and the car, and he and she crisscrossed the state for about a week, and she won. Because Trump's trying the same thing right now. He came to Lake Charles last night to rally for the Trump twins who are running for governor. You know, Tweedledee.
And the other guy.
Tweedledum and Tweedledumber. Ralph Abraham.
Like the basically like Trump light and Trump light light.
Right. And who have been competing for the last few weeks. It could be the most Trumpian. So our representative, at a time it became clear that that Trump is extorting Ukraine to help his election effort. Ralph Abraham comes out with a motion to expel Nancy Pelosi from the House of Representatives. What does that do for the state of Louisiana? The guy has never been he's my representative.
This pony is.
Abraham. Yeah, and it is the 10th poorest district in the country, and every bill
What area do you live in?
From Ruston to the east to the Mississippi River,
the North all Louisiana. The way
down, yeah, well, and all the way down to Bogalusa. So
really?
Oh, that,
That's not even far from here.
No.
I live in New Orleans.
Right.
Or just outside of it. So, I mean, I can be to Bogalusa in like 40 minutes.
Yeah, it's called the Zorro District because it vaguely remembers the Z.
You see, yeah. I probably drove through it yesterday.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And it's one of the poorest areas in the country, and everything he does is designed to bring less money to it. So he's been working.
Starving it.
Tirelessly to keep Obamacare out, now that we have it, to get rid of it again. 500,000 Louisianans will lose their health coverage if he gets elected governor.
In terms of the expansion of Medicaid, that took place.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the Medicare expansion, Medicaid expansion. And the other thing he wants to do is crack down on SNAP recipients. So there'll be less medical care and less
food. So he's looking in people's baskets, too.
Yeah, he's trying to steal everything he can because he sees people making money off the government is corrupt, unless they're him.
Right. It's a class system.
Yeah. It turns out he's made a lot of money off of selling prescriptions from his pharmacy for Oxy. And a lot of that money comes from the government, right? Medicare or Medicaid.
Is that an opioid?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. And then that in the middle of a crisis that we have, an opioid
right.
crisis.
He's a huge pill peddler.
Mm-hmm.
And the other way he's made his money is off of government support for farmers.
Mm-hmm.
They love their socialist paycheck coming from the government. So, yeah, he's always got his snout in the trough. But he's worried about his fellow Louisianans having too much food and have too much health care.
So he's like an anti-Long type figure. So.
Yes. He's an anti-Robin Hood, steal from the poor and give
right.
to the rich, which is what Louisiana traditionally
has. Conventional, yeah, Louisiana politics.
Yeah.
Okay. So, anyway, let's just go ahead.
Famously, he was impeached by early on because, he was attacking the powers that were at the time.
So we're back to Long.
Yeah, back to Long.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's good.
And he was able to stymie it. Using, very strong arm tactics, he got a number of senators to sign a round robin letter that they would never vote to convict, which is, kind of the Donald Trump conundrum, right? If we impeach him, will we ever get enough Republicans to convict? And So once he had that letter and showed it around, things just went kerflooey. And, it was the same bullshit you still hear today. Most of the press was establishment, and so they opposed Long. So he started his own newspaper. What was it, the Louisiana Progress? And, it was biased in his favor, but there are no, neutral sources.
No such thing.
No, and they didn't even pretend to be back then.
Yeah, this is the time, while the Hearst, swinging around a Hearst was around, right?
Yeah, right.
A little bit after, perhaps.
They were all against Long. So, he had some shenanigans. There was a guy that was going to publicize a story right before election about him having an affair with a woman.
Mm-hmm.
He had the guy kidnapped and kept on ice until after the election. But, you can't do good for the people if you aren't in power.
Right, exactly. There's no purity here, and that's one of the things that I really appreciate is not even pretending the illusion of purity. Because in a sense, those elements of purity can do one of two things. They can perpetuate sort of like this elite standard that isn't something that's like a changeable or, mutable, or a much more... but we're often, especially on the left, it's like purity leads to sort of like multiple like self-isolations and purges.
Yeah, I mean, I
have to say that there's not like a such a thing as maybe perhaps too much of like non-therapy or something. However, there's sort of parameters that you need to be through to operate in.
And the so-called dictatorial powers he had were based on him being able to get votes.
Mm-hmm.
And if he didn't have the votes, he wouldn't have the power, right?
Mm-hmm. So he got a lot of votes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And because he got the votes, he got the power. That's mm-hmm. kind of the way democracy is supposed to work.
Mm-hmm.
And this idea that should be always so hobbled that you can never do anything for anybody that's in need, that's an elitist, you know.
It's a very modern idea. Well, I think that's the recurring modern idea, because that goes along the idea of sort of like the idea of what would be called, and, you know, I'm using the word again, neoliberalism now, right?
Mm-hmm.
The idea, or, I mean, you can just call it what it is, liberalism, which is the idea that, like, you should be governed by an invisible hand of the market. You know?
Right.
Basically, everybody is an individual that operates in that framework, and, you know, good luck, buddy.
But then I'm going to go to Ukraine and encourage that you make sure that invisible hand passes from scion of the Obama administration to a scion of the Trump administration.
Right.
It's never been invisible for the upper classes.
No, that's the visible hand of the market. We don't talk about that one.
Yeah, we want the big government program. I mean, I live in a prosperous community, Ruston, Louisiana, in the vast ocean of inland poverty of North Louisiana. And why is that? What is the difference? Well, we have a profitable government program called a university. And if the university closed, the town would die. And, you know, that's true. I mean, you know, Shreveport with their Barksdale Air Force Base, they love every bit of socialism they can scrabble up and put in their pocket. Like, there was another interstate, north-south interstate, that was going to run through Ruston a few years ago, and Shreveport bigfooted it and made sure it came through Shreveport, which already has two interstates.
Yeah, they want more. There's never enough.
More government programs for us.
Right.
So,
Not for you. And then you just need to pull up yourself by your bootstraps.
Right, right. Pretend that they're bootstraps and that you can't defy the laws of gravity and pull yourself up. So, I've been thinking we need to dust Huey Long off
mm-hmm.
for the modern time. It was his rhetoric that was able to reach out to what we consider solidly red America.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even somebody as mild as Bernie, who is nowhere nearly as radical as Huey in his economic prose, to be frank.
He didn't. I mean, he has said billionaires shouldn't exist, but that's basically it.
Where's his cap on wealth proposal?
Yeah,
I haven't heard it.
Cap on wealth. There is Medicare for All, which is sort of like you can consider that a better version of the books for everybody, I suppose. And there have been other things, but no cap on wealth.
But at least he's addressing the material needs of Americans. And I heard recently that the way to win back races, this has actually been tested with, he spent a little money on it. What left message would convince Americans to go along with it? Because Trump and the Republicans are going to preach their racist claptrap. And it's a very simple, powerful model that convinces a lot of people. You're poor because black people and brown people. And it's really simple to understand. But the way to answer them back, and I've been trying to work this into my own podcast, is that racism and white supremacy is a system of thinking about the world and talking about the world that is deployed by the 1%.
Yeah, it's an elite program.
Yeah, to split all the lower classes against each other. So,
it's bosses, essentially, like the bosses of the society, trying to divide labor across racial lines.
Exactly.
Or gender lines or anything like that. And then there's actually sort of a flip side to that as well. The sort of like anti, like the extremely like non-class analysis. And I don't, I'm like talking about sort of like specifically an elite program here, like the Me Too feminism sort of thing, which is to say like, well, that essentially that they would have to be like women or whatever would have to behave as though they're the bosses. And
right.
Then also the sort of like other element of, and this is also sort of like identity politics that are used without any analysis class, that are used to specifically only talk about
right.
things like identity should trump everything else, as opposed to structure in society, which divides the same way.
If Bernie has any flaws in the way he presents his message, it's that he wants to be class analysis only, and he doesn't get into the racial part all that well all the time.
Mm-hmm. Despite the fact that he's been like extremely
yeah.
supportive of these programs since the
1970s,
he's been getting,
right.
he got arrested for civil rights in Chicago.
It's a problem of rhetoric, not where
uh-huh.
he stands on issues. You know, and we do need a Black Lives Matter movement, which deals, you know, with the specifics of cops shooting innocent citizens. Gunning because of their color.
Typically because they're black or they're, you know, some other identity than not white.
Yeah, and we need to release the brown people from the concentration camps, and we have to have an analysis
sure.
that can take that on and not just all boil it down to simple. But in this way that I'm talking about is an approach has the advantage of A, being true, and B, being comprehensive. They're trying to split you off to get you to vote against Medicare for All
mm-hmm.
because they're cheap and they don't want to have to pay more taxes, even though it would help everybody. And,
right.
You know,
or
like
Medicare for All is Medicare for everybody, so it lessens people's precarity situation. They're actually going to
yeah.
have more disposable income in their lives to spend it, so it necessarily closes this wealth gap that exists.
And you can change jobs if you want to
mm-hmm.
or become a painter or a poet. Or, you know, you can do what you want to because – not stuck at a job that supplies. I mean, you know, you and I are at jobs that don't pay a lot, but we've got pretty good health coverage. And it takes a lot before you jump off that.
Right.
So, yeah.
So, I guess.
Go
ahead.
And Huey, way ahead of his time, did not preach segregation. He didn't work in hatred of black people into his speeches.
It was necessary for that for his program to work, even. That,
right.
That he did
yes.
that.
Yeah, he needed black people to vote. And so Louisiana, especially in the 50s when there was the backlash to Brown v. Board,
mm-hmm.
and other, you know, the southern states really cracked down on black voting. And Huey's brother Earl, he's still along with it because that was his base. He needed black
mm-hmm.
people to vote. And the poor white people needed black people to vote. And
mm-hmm.
trying, you know, you make them choose between their pocketbook and their hatred.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they'll choose their pocketbook.
Yeah. So as we sort of wrap up, can we just talk a little bit about the assassination of Long, sort of we're going to do this in three parts, the assassination, sort of his legacy, and how should we sort of view I mean, we've talked about this a little bit already, but how is he currently viewed, and how should we do it, like look at him going forward? So I guess that's sort of part of it.
Well,
so the assassination first.
Yeah, he was back in town. He was not a governor at the time, not in the governor's, you know, he was ex-governor, but he was still running the state, and he had a number of bills he wanted passed, maybe 30 or 40. And, of course, they passed them, and he's kind of rushing through the foyer of the tallest Capitol building in the country to this day. By the way, when he built it, he was an anti. He couldn't get this one senator to vote to support the money. So he had a hole drilled in the ceiling, and the senator placed under that. So when it rained, the rain fell on him. And he got his new building. And my grandfather lived in Mississippi, had a farm, but he worked as a carpenter in the week in these WPA type projects. And he came over to Louisiana and helped build that capital. So Huey Long put food on my family's table, even though we were in Mississippi at the time. Anyway, this Dr. Weiss comes up to him. The standard story is Dr. Weiss shot him. The contrarian story is that Huey Long's bodyguards accidentally shot him, which is why modern Secret Service tackles people. They don't shoot at them. John Hinckley Jr.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were guns all around Ronald Reagan. Nobody pulled it out because they didn't want to shoot bystanders or put another bullet in Ronald Reagan. So anyway,
right.
He survived the bullet but died from infection, which, you get a gut shot before penicillin
right. And
modern surgery. It's a,
yeah.
It's, yeah. And his
a
last
more
words,
decades than he might have lived.
Yeah, and his last words were, "Don't let me die. I've got so much to do."
Right.
So, hold on.
So, yeah, I guess it's go ahead.
I think they have an accomplishment right here.
And really quickly, he had a lot of – so you mentioned his brother Earl briefly, and he had other family that were a part of the network as well, yeah?
Yeah, family and also hangers-on. There was what they called the Long Machine. But while they remained in power after Long died, a lot of the drive to alleviate the suffering of the poor people went away, and a lot of them were in it for what they could get. And so they got what they could get out of being a Longite instead of being what the other folks were. So, they didn't undo all of it. They kept building roads.
Right. You can't undo these things because the people will be like, "Wait up, you just gave us all this stuff.
You're taking
it now?
My book."
Yeah.
I paid for those books.
Right. Exactly. And that's sort of thing that alludes to what you were talking about earlier, too, with the idea that people have, like, they get their, socialism from, they get their stuff from the government, and then they, like, if you try to take it away, they will fight for it. Like,
oh,
Medicare,
yeah.
If anybody ever goes to that, it gets attacked. If anybody ever goes for Medicare, or Social Security, they get, because people already receive benefit from these things, if you take it away, nobody's going to fight for that, and they'll fight against you taking it. And then, and so that sort of moves to the idea that, if we got a Medicare for all, and like a true Medicare for all that had everybody on the at the point of treatment, then you couldn't take that away because people would like it too much.
It's the beauty of the truly universal program.
Mm-hmm.
So, like a Liz Warren style program, where we're going to means test who gets their education debt relieved. Well, then only those people who are basically on some kind of welfare, and what's the other word they call it? Entitlement, and we got to cut back on the entitlement. The minute you start giving it to rich people, they will fight tooth and nail. You may be aware of what's the program that supports Louisiana students if they have a certain GPA when they go to college?
College? That's TOPS.
TOPS,
one of these,
right.
Patrick Taylor thing.
And people are always telling me, well, TOPS should be means tested. And I said, well, that's the minute to die.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, because right now, Bobby Jindal, as horrible as he was never able to undo TOPS.
Yeah.
And rich people get that.
It is already kind of means tested, I would say, but not in like a formal like income way. But like performance on tests and scores are, and I'm probably getting like definitely off topic here. But
no, it is the topic.
But,
like Huey Long for today. Like, what are we going to do with this?
Yeah, but I guess I'm moving on specifically to TOPS because, like, to get the GPA that you would need to get TOPS, more people would come from lowly backgrounds because, well, like socioeconomics leads to performance in schools.
Right.
Like it's very strongly correlated.
Yeah. And so it's actually benefits the rich more than the poor probably, but still probably worth it. Although
yeah, no, it's
I
definitely
like,
worth it. It's definitely worth it, but it's so I guess my point is that it has this sort of like trapping of everybody. It's for everybody.
Mm-hmm. And we could also do it by just taking the money out of TOPS and putting it on lower tuition.
Right. Yeah. Totally. Anyway, but anyway.
Okay. So other accomplishments. Do you remember Company Store, that song by Tennessee Ernie Ford?
Mm-hmm.
St. Peter, don't you call me because I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Yeah.
That was a real thing. You would sometimes not get paid in money. You'd get paid in strip.
Yep.
Only paid to spend it was at the store that the company owned or the plantation owned. And if you're a sharecropper, you get all this stuff on debt. And then at the end of the year, when you sell your crop, you split half and half with the owner. Half of the money you would make goes to the owner off the top, and then the use of the rest of it to pay off your debt with the company store. And you could even sell people, like if you have a worker this other guy wants, he'd say, how much does he owe you? And then you pay that debt off, and then he's indebted to you. So you're going to work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not chattel slavery quite, but it's not that far off, and it affected black and white alike. In the debt.
It's controlling someone based off of the debt they need to have to exist in the world.
Right. And they would, you know, a lot of the sharecroppers were prevented from owning animals themselves and raising their own crops themselves so that they would have to buy it from the company store rather than being self-sufficient. He also, of course, built roads and bridges. Ah, here we go. 33 miles of pavement in the state of Louisiana. I guess that's outside of town.
Mm-hmm.
And he left, three bridges. And here's one of his, you know, dictatorial things. People wanted to put in their own private bridge over the Mississippi, which you would have to pay them to use.
A toll bridge, but that would be a privately owned toll bridge.
Yes, a privately owned toll bridge that would make money for them. You can imagine how much that thing would cost.
That sounds medieval.
Yes, it is. But I mean, we're in Louisiana, right? We're still a fascist state at this point, or a feudal state. So anyway, he puts a free bridge right next to it, and he puts a free bridge right next to it, a public bridge.
Yeah.
It will not have a toll. And the thing dies because he's going to cross their bridge.
Right, exactly. He just submarine their money-making scheme.
So he not only built a road system, he made it public. Mm-hmm. And when they would come and say, well, why don't you let private enterprise handle it? They have been. And we have mud everywhere.
Yeah. Which bridge was that? Was that the Sunshine Bridge, or was that the Huey P. Long Bridge?
No, it was, I think, the Huey in, I'm not sure if it was the Huey in New Orleans. It was way before the Sunshine Bridge, but I think it was a bridge across, maybe it was the Pontchartrain Bridge. I can't remember.
The Causeway?
Maybe that's not that old. Anyway, the bridge he wanted to build, somebody wanted to put in a private bridge.
Yeah, that's the point.
Right.
I was just asking my own curiosity.
Yeah, and I wish I could remember it, but I'd have to dig. If you want to know all these answers, read Every Man a King, the Huey Long political autobiography.
He'll definitely make sure he highlights the things that he did.
Oh, my God. The book is chock full of pictures of before and after, and after. This is
like
what
I made this better.
Yeah, everybody before me had done, and this is what I did.
Yeah.
And they're beautiful pictures for the era. We've got the first edition images scanned into our copy on the website to get to see these beautiful, you know, like, Pontchartrain, put in those steps that lead down to the Pontchartrain, Lake Pontchartrain, kind of a levee, but also a way to get to the water and all that stuff. Also, another accomplishment, building up the universities, although he handled it directly. So he was kind of running, especially LSU. We up here in North Louisiana were ignored. But, you know, he would call plays.
A control freak type.
Yeah, he helped write the fight song for the LSU band, call plays and fire coaches if they didn't do.
Call plays.
Yeah.
Governor is the coach.
Right.
That's hilarious. Imagine John Bell Edwards calling, like trying to tell Coach O'Geron. Or imagine, like, even before that, like somebody trying to tell Nick Saban when he was the coach what place he should
call. Right. Yeah.
Nick Saban would lose his mind. Like,
he had more.
If he's the governor, I don't care if he's the king.
He's more powerful than the governor, but that never happened in the Huey. Also, here's a downside. You know, the Daily Reveille, which is the newspaper of LSU, started criticizing the governor, and they had the staff fired because this is my newspaper. I'm paying for it. I'm not going to have them criticizing
it. Right. I remember when I worked at UNO, I actually worked at the Driftwood. Like, I just started over there, and they shuttered it. Sort of like one of those sort of totally helpless situations.
Right.
Like, I'm imagining like that, except the governor decided to, like, you can't have this open anymore.
Yeah. So also public schools, and we talked about the books, but when he became governor, 1/3 of our kids were not in any school.
Mm-hmm.
And so he added schools as well as books and made sure that education was universal, which had the downside. All of these things have their dark side, right? And this was the beginning of the end for French in Louisiana, because education was in English, and if you came to school speaking French, you were punished and had it drilled out of you by the teacher. So he could have been a little more woke.
Unwoke. Get woke, Huey Long.
Yeah, so what we need is a woke Huey Long.
Woke Huey Long. But not that woke. Not, like, woke to the point where, like, again, it's getting in the way of the program.
Right.
Like the program is benefiting everyone. We can't have the – and this is really difficult because, like, it's just a complicated matter, right?
Right.
Like there's no such thing as a non-racist capitalism. It's not – it doesn't exist. So by lessening the inequalities that are currently exist and are reinforced by the economic system that we have, then, you know, we can actually address these issues on an honest way.
Yeah. And, you know, if he had been a little more woke, he could have said, well, let's keep French down south and teach it French. That could be our patrimony as Louisianans, is our ability to keep French.
Yeah.
Maybe be bilingual.
Cajun French is basically, like, you know, a very thin sliver of people in the area even speak that any longer.
Yeah, and at the time there were probably, you know, a couple of million. By 1970, there was still a million because of the old people. So he avoided the bank crisis in Louisiana that destroyed much of the country.
By basically threatening to pull the pin on the grenade.
Yeah. I'll close the bank down first and let's see how it goes then. The oil tax. You know, the Saudis are the richest family in the world. Why? Because oil companies pay taxes. Alaskans get a check from the government every year that's excess oil tax that they have left over.
$1,000
richest companies in the history of the world will literally drill under the polar cap, spending $1 billion just to try to make an exploratory well. But they cannot possibly afford to pay taxes in the state of Louisiana.
Yeah, they just don't have it. They're turning billions in profit, but they just can't, that tax man is on their ass.
And we were talking to a Democratic, we've been pushing Democratic candidates to work with what you've got. And I mentioned to him restoring some of these. Oh, can't do that.
Right.
Democrats are afraid, but that's been undone over the years, right? It's that severance tax.
Right. A friend of mine who's running for state agriculture commissioner, actually right after this interview, I'll be going to a returns party at her house, Marguerite Green. She came on Good Morning Comrade on a live interview about a month ago, and she talked about how when she talked to sort of like a campaign manager that she had, they told her not to talk about climate change.
And oh, my God.
She basically, like, fired him and moved on.
Right.
And now she's actually, it seems to me that she's got a chance of winning this thing.
Louisiana is on the front line of climate change, mm-hmm. and we keep electing politicians that don't believe in climate change.
Yeah.
And
anyway,
the last thing I would mention was, once he gets the taxes, he wanted to share the wealth with ordinary people. So,
right.
you know, ordinary people could have a house, you know, a kind of stake in our economy. Again, the way I see it, he wasn't, you know, this wasn't full-blown communism that's trying to destroy capitalism, but it was enough to freak out the powers that be. And so I think the reaction to him was, you know, to be expected. And if we get Bernie in, that's exactly what we'll see again, or even Liz.
Right.
You know, the minute Liz gets the nod, these people that are pushing her right now is better than Bernie. They will turn against her, like they turned against Obama.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he passed the modest bank regulations to try to keep them from destroying themselves.
And everyone around. They pulled the pin on the grenade that time.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, we'd just blow ourselves up because we're too stupid. You know, capitalism is not only, sociopathic. You know, there's no morality to it other than making money.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not maximizing profit, then you're doing it wrong.
But
also it's very stupid and short-sighted
because
of the way we set it up. We've got a three-month window and the next profit report. And so that's all they're concerned about, not down the road. So you need a beneficent government to come in. And if you don't want government involved with corporations, well, we could just dissolve the corporations. You know? Those are a legal fiction created by our government.
Right.
We made it thousands of years without them.
So
figure it out again.
Right. So just to wrap up, if we had. Professor Harvey Kay from the University of Wisconsin Green Bay in this room, and he was having a discussion with us. What would you tell him about Huey Long that maybe he got a little bit, you know, wrong or whatever?
If we had who?
Harvey Kay. To bring it back to the beginning.
I would just say that as progressives, we have got to start preaching a message that will reach all of these red states. We can't just write them off. I mean, we're in a red state, right?
Right. No question.
And are we going to give up on the state that progressives created and built? You know, this is not, you know, they say pointedly our state. Well, it's our state. We made it. They move in like hermit crabs and want to take over. But we've got to figure out some way to relate to common people who are, you know, white, because a lot of the country is still white and working class. And
right workers, white workers are workers, too.
Yeah, white workers are workers. And for the last 30 years, we haven't been giving them anything. Let's give them unions. Let's give them raises. Let's give them health care. Let's make sure we let them
give them a war
against the 1%. Well, I mean, if Liz Warren wins, you know, she's a kind of a Roosevelt-ish Democrat, although not as progressive economically as even he was, but I would happily vote for her. But, you know, I'm sick of people in the radical middle telling us we need to adjust our expectations to support their candidate. We did that last time. It was Hillary Clinton. She was a disaster even without Trump, right?
Yeah.
You know, the last time we heard about that great platform they developed from Bernie was at the end of the convention. She never mentioned it again. You know, nobody ever felt like she was really going to help the bulk of the people. She's an elite, you know, Davos, neoliberalism, let's make deals to protect the drug companies, kind of elite. But if we could get our person nominated, then they would have the opportunity to adjust to a real progressive, you know.
Right.
Somebody like Bernie. Other, I mean, compared to the others, Liz is the best alternative.
Mm-hmm.
And I worry, I don't know how serious this heart attack Bernie had really was. So, you know, we may or may not have the option of voting for him. But I think we still need the activism of all those Bernie groups.
Right.
And I hope, well, at least we know the DSA has its own structure independent of Bernie Sanders and that it will continue.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope be able to spread up here to some of the traditional Huey Long places. And not
right.
speak for hippies down in New Orleans, but good old boys up here. And that's mm-hmm. where we have to figure out, okay, what was Huey doing that they liked? Because they liked him a lot.
Right. Right. Okay. Well, thank you, Bruce.
Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm so happy to get to talk to you some more. We had about 15 minutes before the meeting a few weeks ago, but that's been essentially chatting.
Right. Yeah. But if we could have you back on again sometime and talk about some other stuff.
Well, and I would like to get you on our podcast to maybe talk about what you're doing, how you're doing the DSA,
sure.
and
yeah.
how
I'll talk
organize.
About some of the labor work I'm doing.
Yeah.
My whole philosophy and my whole approach is labor-based, so
yes.
it might be a short conversation.
Well, but we betrayed our labor base as mm-hmm. Democrats. You know, I think
sure.
that started with Carter. Who was the guy before Carter?
Gerald Ford.
No, the one, McGovern.
Okay.
Like, McGovern had a bad relationship with the unions, and as a result,
right.
lost 49 states. That should tell us something. But what we did instead was further betray the union. So, you
right.
know, if we got our union back, that's our base.
Right. Those are the working class institutions of power. And if you don't
yes.
have working class institutions of power, you don't have the power. All right.
Yes. Okay, thank you so much.